Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Sunday brings the much-anticipated season finale for HBO's Game of Thrones, but regular viewers of the show, like me, may have already seen the most incredible episode of the season, the penultimate one that was on last weekend. Now, we aren't going to spoil anything if you haven't gotten to your DVR yet, but we are going to talk about an interesting trend in television with NPR TV critic Eric Deggans, who's with us now. Hi, Eric.
Hey.
And you point out that shows like Game of Thrones are putting a lot of money into the shows leading up to the finales. Why is that?
Well, it's an interesting dynamic. So if you look at Game of Thrones, for example, you know, this is already a high-priced show. It's HBO's most expensive show. And it's set in this fictional world that is kind of like medieval times, but it also has dragons, has a little bit of magic, has these sort of undead creatures that walk. So you're talking special effects, right? There was a comment in an Entertainment Weekly story where they asked, you know, what do dragons eat? Well, they eat money, right? Because it costs so much to create these animals. So we had an episode, as you mentioned, on Sunday that had some pretty big special effects. We had the appearance of a dragon in the middle of a huge fight scene. We won't say much to spoil it for people who haven't seen it yet. But it obviously was a huge set piece, and it cost a lot of money. And before that, the week before that, we had a huge battle scene with a bunch of undead characters that also involved a lot of special effects, and even a giant appeared, right? So
yeah.
I think there's a strategy here where the show has these huge episodes that get fans talking about the big set pieces, the special effects, and most importantly, these pivotal plot points. So if you look back to the show's first season, you see this pivotal character who's set up as a hero. He's played by the most recognizable actor in the cast. He gets beheaded one episode before the season finale. Hmm. And we can look back to the second season and we can see that a really pivotal battle scene with lots of special effects took place one episode before the finale. And I think what happens
And then the Red Wedding also happened one episode before the
Red Wedding scene. That's a very pivotal scene, and one that people who've read the books that the show's based on always talk about. And that happened before the season finale. And now we've seen sort of two main, you know, really special effects heavy sequences happen in two episodes before the finale and one episode before the finale. I think it's a very conscious strategy, and I think it's a very successful one. Game of Thrones is now HBO. Most popular show. It draws up to 9 million viewers a week when you consider the viewing across the whole week, which is why we're not talking that much about Sunday's episode, because a lot of people are going to watch it. Up to 60% of the audience is going to watch it on DVRs or delayed viewing or on demand after the show's aired.
But why not put all that money into the finale to get people to stick around and be interested for the start of next season?
Well, I think there's a sense that the impact of the finale is going to be a little more limited, and you're asking people to remember that finale for many months. I mean, it could be 9 months before the show returns. So I think it makes more sense to get the immediate return on that investment by having the big episode air right before the finale. That gets a lot of buzz happening. People show up for the finale, and then you give them a smaller shock. You know, as we saw last season, one pivotal character killed another pivotal character in the show's finale.
Right.
And
but that was,
and
a
it
cheap
was a smaller
killing.
Scene.
It, it didn't
was
cost
a smaller
a lot of
scene.
Money. Right.
It was cheap. It was a smaller scene. It was very intimate. It was personal. It was these two characters facing off. But it was a pivotal scene for people who follow the show. And it was enough to make people wonder, well, what's going to happen to the whole landscape of the show when it comes back? But you had the huge, you know, pivotal scene, fight scene before that. So the episode before that. So I think this is a great strategy. I think it's worked very well for Game of Thrones. We've seen The Walking Dead also do it, where they'll have big, huge scenes with lots of zombies being killed, you know, one episode before the finale. So it's a tried and true, I think, tactic for cable shows especially, where you have only about 12 or 13 episodes, and then they're off the air for quite a while.
Okay, Eric, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on one other thing in the TV world this week, which is some comments from Jerry Seinfeld. He's been talking about comedians having to be kind of careful to be more politically correct. And here he is talking on Seth Meyers' show Late Night last night about the line that you shouldn't cross.
They keep moving the lines in for no reason.
Right.
I do this joke about the way people need to justify their cell phone. I need to have it with me because people are so important.
Right.
You know, I said, well, they don't seem very important the way you scroll through them like a gay French king. You know, just... Well, I did this line recently in front of an audience. And you can, comedy's where you can kind of feel like an opinion. And they thought, what do you mean gay? What are you talking about gay? What are you saying, gay? What are you doing? What do you mean, you know? And I thought, are you kidding me? I mean, we can't even...
Eric, your thoughts.
Well, I'm always suspicious when a comedian who's been validly criticized for some issues turns around and says, everybody's so politically correct. I don't know about that joke. But I know Jerry Seinfeld has been criticized in the past because his classic TV show, Seinfeld, basically created a New York where there were almost no people of color in it. And they didn't have hardly any characters of color on the show. One analysis found 19 black characters over the course of 10 years on that show. So I'm a little suspicious when you hear these kinds of things. For example, one of comics' greatest comedians, Eddie Murphy, an amazingly funny comedian, someone who broke all kinds of ground, also told a lot of really horrible jokes about gay people. And when you listen back to his early comedy albums now and you hear the way he referred to gay people, the terms that he used, the denigration of them, you realize that this is the kind of humor that sort of fed stereotypes about gay people. And frankly, it wasn't cool. You know, I listen to that stuff and I say, you know, that's damaging, and I really shouldn't have endorsed it as a consumer.
So you don't think we're getting too politically correct? You think they're just complaining too much about this?
I think we're in the middle of a discussion, and I think because we have a legacy of some of our best comedians doing really damaging humor about gay people, when a famous comic tells a joke like that, which frankly he didn't even have to have the word gay in it. You know, he could have just said a French king.
And we would get it,
you know. So then you're like, well, why is gay in there? And what does that mean? And the way he used it, it's sort of like critical of the character. You know, you're like a gay friend, you know. So I don't blame the audience for taking a second to go, wait a minute, what did he mean by that? You know, because we have reached a point where we realize that comics can make stereotypes mainstream. Comics can make pejorative attitudes about people seem normal and funny and entertaining. And so we do have to come to them sometimes and say, hey, wait a minute, what did you mean by that? And comics very naturally push back against that because they want the freedom to be able to say what they want to say. But this is a healthy dialogue. And when I hear somebody who is mega rich like Jerry Seinfeld complaining about the fact that sometimes an audience might say, hey, what do you mean by that? I sort of feel like, dude, really? Is it on the list of problems that you have as a celebrity? That's got to be way down on the list. And it's an issue that I think is healthy and is important, that we have to take a look at how we joke about people to make sure that we're not enabling stereotypes. Now, I think in the case of that joke he just talked about, it's a minor thing. But, you know, again, when we talk about somebody like Eddie Murphy and the way he's talked about gay people in the past, that's a major thing. And so I don't know that it's wrong to say to a comic, you know, let's check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Eric Deggans, NPR's TV critic who joins us each week. Eric, thank you so much as always.
Thanks so much for having me.